Good morning and welcome back to Nachyom. Today we're going to be focusing on Yechezkel Perek Chof Aleph, the 21st chapter of Yechezkel. This prophecy is generally about the approach of Bavel to Yerushalayim, which is not expecting to be vulnerable to the Babylonians. We have three sections in this Perek which are actually very difficult to understand. They're not immediately obvious. There's a lot of parables in them and metaphor. The first section is going to be about the burning forest. The second section is about the idea of the incoming sword, and the third and last prophecy is about the fork in the road. Let's try and unpack each of those in their own space. The Nevuah starts and ends with the consuming fire of Hashem going out and consuming the area around, and it starts with the unsheathing of the sword of wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the end, it is resheathed, it is put back into its scabbard, and that's what we see at the end of the passage. So there's a general overlying trend, we're going to see the specific differences. So section one is the burning forest. We start in the very beginning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yechezkel to turn Derech Temona, Vatayf al Daron, so he's giving a prophecy to the south, and he's supposed to tell a prophecy to the Ya'ar HaSadeh, to the forest of the field, and say to it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send out a fire which is going to consume all the trees, whether it be the succulent trees, the Eitz Lach, or the Eitz Yavesh, or the dry trees. Everything is going to be consumed in this fire, and everybody's going to see this and know HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this. Now, at this point in time, Yechezkel actually objects. He says, Aha, Hashem Elokim, which is one of the times where Yechezkel objects, and he says, Heima Omrimli, Ha'aloyim Memashel Mesholim, who they're going to keep saying, look, you got all these parables to tell. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it more explicitly. In the next little section, he explains the mashal, going from Pasuk Vav to Pasuk Yud. Hashem says, you know what, turn to the south, turn to my El Mikdashim, to the sanctuaries, seems to be referring to the future Beis HaMikdash as well, both Mikdash Rishon and Mikdash Sheni, and tell them that I'm going to send a fire, which is going to, I'm going to remove my sword. The sword is coming from it, and it's unsheathed from its scabbard, and I'm going to cut off tzaddikim and rishayim. They're all going to be killed at this point in time, and everyone will know that I am the one who took out the sword, and it will not return again. So this is the end of the first section. It seems very clear that the first part was the parable, and the second part is the interpretation based on Yechezkel's objection. Let's just think about a few things. First of all, one reflection is that it seems to be that it's both Bat HaMikdash. So as much as Yechezkel is talking about the here and now, there seems to be an inference for the future Bat HaMikdash, Beis HaMikdash as well. Why is Yerushalayim considered a forest? That's clear, one-to-one parallel. The forest was Yerushalayim. So Malvim says, because there are many different types of trees, as we're about to see. There's Rishayim and there's Tzaddikim, so the different types of trees. So that's why a forest is a conglomeration of many types of vegetation. Rashi says, it's not because of now, it's because of the future. When Yerushalayim will be destroyed, Hashem, Rachmana Litzlan, when Yerushalayim will be destroyed, then it'll be empty like a forest. It'll be a no man's land. That's what it's referring to. Now, it seems to be that Yechezkel is objecting to being the bearer of Mishalim, of parables. Why? What's the problem with this? So Radak says that the reason is that Yechezkel is concerned that people just say, look, you're just a great orator, you're a great poet, but you're not a divine spokesman. So when I tell you all these Mishalim, it's clear that I don't have the obvious message, and therefore they reject what I'm saying because of this, which is why Hashem relents and gives them this specific message. Whereas the Malbim says, no, it's just simple. Is that the Amcha are not able to understand the Mishalim. It's too high for them. They're not able to internalize the message because it's too complex. Please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, make it a little simpler for them. What seems to be clear over here is that the wet trees, the succulent trees, are the Tzaddikim, and the dry trees are the Rishayim, and they're all being consumed together. But why is that so? Why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is promising death for everybody? So the Gemara Baba Kama Daf Samach Amud Aleph famously says, in the name of Rav Yosef, as we know, by the last plague, the Makas Bechoris, everybody needs to stay inside their house and have the blood on the lintel. Why is that? Surely HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the difference between Tzaddikim and Rishayim, and Egyptians and Jews. The answer is that when the Nitan Rishus Lamashchis, When the mashches, the destructive force, is let loose in the world, it is not mavchim ben tzaddik l'rasha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you need to stay away. At this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I'm releasing a negev, I'm releasing a plague, and this plague, this mashches, is not going to differentiate between who it's killing or not, and that's why this is what's going to happen to Yerushalayim, unfortunately. And if you look through the psukim itself, it seems pretty clear that after the tzaddikim are killed, that's when the sword will affect us north and the south, which means to say that once Yerushalayim falls, as the Malvim points out, then the whole area of the Middle East is going to collapse as well upon the destruction of Yerushalayim. That's prophecy one, vision one. The next section is about the approach of the sword. So what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yechezkel, Yechezkel starts sighing publicly. He starts just walking around groaning. And everybody's going to ask you, why are you groaning? And you're going to tell them the following. Here's what you're going to say. Two swords are being sharpened and beaten to be cleaned of rust. Cherev, cherev, hudchav gamaruta. The swords are going to be sharpened and cleaned. The sharpness is to slaughter, and the cleaning is to shine and terrify people with the shine of the swords. And you might say, oh, the swords are not coming to us. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I'm sorry. Shevet b'ni, Moeses koetz. No, it's going to come on the tribe of my son. It's coming to you. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's not going to help going to the Avodah Zarah now. It's not going to help you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the sword to you, to Nebuchadnezzar, both to terrify and to kill. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu then says to Yechezkel, Achein Sofoi Kal Yareich, so hit your thigh. That's a movement of mourning in sort of agony of how the sword is going to be coming, because it's going to be coming and it's not going to be unused. Then he goes a little further and he says, he talks about Vahach kaf al kaf. Now start clapping your hands in this sense of pain and agony and mourning, because of a tikofel cherev shlishia. There's going to be a third sword which is going to be unsheathed, and it's going to be a greater smiting, a greater hitting than the first two. And at this point in time, the sword is about to descend southwards, and it's going to come to a crossroads of destruction. We'll see about that in a second. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that in a most remarkable way, V'gamani akei kapi al kapi, v'anichoisi chamosi ani Hashem dibarti. I'm going to clap my hands as well, whether it be in anger or in mourning, but nonetheless, he has the human being clapping in this expression of mourning, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is clapping in the sense of anger and mourning. Very terrifying scene. So what's exactly going on over here? There seems to be cherev, cherev. Are there two swords? How's this working? So the Mitzvot David says, no, it's just the same sword. It's just saying, no, the sword is coming, and it's emphasized, we say it twice. Whereas the Malbim says a most remarkable, remarkable interpretation. It's worthwhile reading the entire Malbim inside. It's extremely long in the section. But the Malbim says that we're talking about over here a double-edged sword. We're talking about a sword on one side which is used for killing, and the other side which is used for terrifying. If you think about this, meaning the one side is clean, so it reflects light and can be used to terrify, maruta, and the other one is going to be sharp and used for killing. Because when you start killing with a sword, it's no longer shiny, it doesn't have the same luster, it isn't able to scare people. And he goes into the Medayik from the Psukim, and you see that this sword cannot have a handle, meaning to say, because it's double-edged, there's no space for the wooden handle to hold it. So what's this referring to? What's the Nimshal? So he explains that Nebuchadnezzar is going to come to the city of Yerushalayim. He's going to use both tactics. He's going to both use violence and murder to try to get them out. He's going to besiege the city. But he's also going to use terror tactics. And the shine of the sword, he's going to use both sides. And in fact, the Malbim goes so far as to say, to argue, that Nebuchadnezzar, under the siege, at a certain point relinquished the siege and sort of made overtures of peace, as if he's going to be peaceful. And what happened after that was the Jews themselves started arguing, should we make peace with him? Should we fight? And they themselves started killing each other, which means to say that was exactly what Nebuchadnezzar wanted to do. That was the shining side of the sword, is by showing that it's not for killing, but rather just for shining, then Bnei Yisrael in that vacuum destroy themselves. Which is a much worse destruction than before. And he says this, it repeats itself in the times of the Romans. Later on, when Titus besieged the city in the second Beis HaMikdash, there were the Biryonim, the group, as you know, the Gomorrah and Gittin, who went and burnt down the storehouses because they had different opinions about whether they should fight the Romans or not. Same thing seems to be happening over here. It is interesting, we're going to see later on, that that in the Pesukim it seems to be that a third of the people are killed by Nebuchadnezzar, but two-thirds are killed by Jews themselves, which means to say the tactic of Nebuchadnezzar is working terribly successfully. There are also other ways of looking at these three swords. So, for instance, Rashi says the first sword is Tzidkiyahu, the sword killing Tzidkiyahu. The second one is the sword killing Gedaliah, and the third sword is those who followed Yochanan ben Kareach into Egypt, as you saw the final last refugees of the Jews who returned to the area of Egypt. So, it could be referring to specific historical swords as well. Now, we move into the third section. This is really essentially the crossroads. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, he says to Yechezkel, set up a crossroads where it's clear, where he has to choose between one way and another, where Nebuchadnezzar has to choose between one way going to Yerushalayim and one way going to Bnei Amon. And what's going to happen is he's going to use all his sorcerers, all his signs, Leksoim Kesem, to make a decision as to whether he's going to attack Amon, his enemy, first, or Judea, the area of Yehuda, and his sorcery will come out in the right hand that he's going to kill Yerushalayim. He's going to go besiege them and slaughter blood. But to the people of Yerushalayim, it's shov be'enehem. It means nothing. They don't think that Nebuchadnezzar can conquer Yerushalayim. Nobody's conquered Yerushalayim up till now. So they say, but because of this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, v'humazkir avon li'tofes. Because you don't even think that you're worthy of punishment, that's going to be even worse for you. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that he is going to send the sword in your direction, and because you remembered, you brought about the remembrance of sins, it's going to bring about the sins of your fathers as well. And at this point in time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to the king, and he says to the king, which is ostensibly Tzidki Yahu HaMelech, Hasir HaMitznefes V'harim HaTarah, take off the mitznefes, which is a priestly hat, remove the crown, Zoyes Lo Zoyes HaShvola HaGbeh HaGavoya HaShpil. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to lower the high one and raise the lower one. This refers to Tzidki Yahu being dethroned, and the lower king, who now is Yechoniah, is going to be rethroned. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, he repeats this, Avo, 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 the terrible kinah on Tzidkiyahu, that Tzidkiyahu's family will be completely wiped out. And then finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Amon, which was the second option in the crossroads over here, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you think you're safe, but the sword has been unsheathed, and it's not going to be resheathed until it destroys you. The fire will come out and consume you as well in destruction. So it is important to notice that Amon was also one of the factors who wanted to fight against the Babylonians, and in fact they were the one who inspired the murder of Gedaliah. So they're pretty bad people. They wanted to fight, not to make peace with Babylon, which ultimately causes tremendous amount of problems, because Ishmael was hired. The person who killed Gedaliah was hired by the Melech Amon, as we saw. But what seems to be happening over here is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is setting up in such a way that it isn't imminent, it isn't clear if Nebuchadnezzar is choosing to destroy Yerushalayim or not, whether it just happens to be by chance, which gives more space for people to make the erroneous decision and saying that in fact they are safe. And it's interesting, at the end of this prophecy, you see that both Amon and Israel both think that the prophecy of falling to one or the other makes the other one impervious. Meaning, when it falls, the prophecy, when the lots fall on Yerushalayim, they say, it's not possible. Anyway, he wasn't probably coming here in the first place. And then the Ammonites say, he's not going to come to us because he's going there first. And both of those are mistakes, because ultimately, Nebuchadnezzar is coming and the sword is coming. This concludes the series of three visions which Yechezkel has. It is fascinating to notice that although Yechezkel objects to the fact that he is a bearer of Mishalim, it is fascinating that this prophecy bears more Mishalim than any others. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.